Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And we hope that you'll remind you that the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. We welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, but please hold your calls for the time being, because we have this with us a very, very special guest, Bill Sardi, and we're going to be talking about health issues. Now, of course, a lot of people up there are saying, health issues, why do you want to talk about that? Let's talk about 9/11 or something else that's really exciting. But health issues are really extremely important, first of all, because there's so much out there that the average doctor doesn't know. And I don't say this to deprecate doctors. I love doctors. I am one of them. I worked my heart out, and the other doctors did as well. But there's so many things that are never taught in medical school, that are never mentioned in medical journals, that are never discussed at medical meetings, and certainly the organized medicine is not going to tell the average doctor many of the things you'll hear from Bill Sardi. Bill spends his time researching the medical literature. He's got a phenomenal knowledge and great information. And the fact of the matter is, if you're out there in the listening audience, you're going to have to know about health and health issues, and you're going to have to look after your own health. It's been known for many, many years. Certain specific diets and specific foods would help prevent cancer. And yet anybody would suggest that when you have cancer, you would want to use these same sorts of foods and the nutritional supplements is looked upon as rather silly. And yet if it'll prevent cancer, why wouldn't it help if you actually have cancer? And there's so many things that can be done, and there's some exciting things out there. So without further ado, I'm going to go to Bill Sardi. Hi, Bill. How are you doing?
Great to be with you. And, of course, we enter a season in the next couple of months. Americans are going to, on the average, gain about 7 pounds in their weight. So maybe weight gain is a topic certainly seems to be in the news anyway lately.
Well, why don't we do that? We did that on our last program, and I thought it was a fascinating program. And there is so much out there that, as you pointed out in your treatise, you know, any diet you can lose weight on if you cut back on your calories and exercise.
Well, certainly they've got these... They're practically begging every American to get into some kind of diet, the Weight Watchers, Atkins, the Zone Diet, the Dean Ornish low-fat diet. And what they said was basically all of them work. Come on, get in one. Why they're urging everybody is there's obviously a problem here. We've got so many Americans that are gaining weight and gaining weight. I think between the age of 20 and 40, a typical American gains about 2 pounds a year. The part they don't tell you there is it only takes about 100 calories a day of trimming, and you'll never get there. So you don't need to work that hard on it. I think Dr. Phil, he has this thing on television now trying to lead America into some sort of a weight maintenance program. And he's certainly got the right crowd, because it's the TV watchers that are sitting there probably gaining weight and, you know, eating more snacks. I think the studies kind of show that. So This is a real American topic. The advanced countries of the world are essentially eating themselves to death, while the developing countries are starving and trying to find their way through. So it's an anomaly. It's certainly nothing modern man could be prepared for. Abundance has done him in, and of course, we see so many problems in this area of weight control. We're living longer, we're living better, and we're certainly living with less physical activity than we've ever had before, ever in the history of man. Dr. Phil says, well, you know, the coyotes are never, you never see a fat coyote, that's true, but then coyotes don't have any choices. They have to walk everywhere. We've got cars. We're not going to abandon them. We're not going to go back to the old ways of life. So that means we're going to have to find other ways to get there. And we need to be smarter in what we're doing and not only eat a little bit less, but maybe find ways that are more creative. One of the things I'm a little concerned about when we talk about weight loss is there's so much guilt involved. Everybody probably just turned the channel off listening to the radio here when there's a lot more to say about it that might really help some people if you just get more specific in the information that you provide to people. What is causing your weight loss? Is it just the food you eat, or might it be which sex you are, which part of the month it is, what area of the country you live in, if you're a female, a pregnancy, childbirth, menopause? I mean, there's all kinds of issues here that cause different types of weight gain and so on. And so you need to know those. People who live in northern climates in the winter tend to gain weight because they don't have the sunlight. The sunlight needs to reach the human eye and stimulate little glands back at the base of the brain in order for you to have proper maintenance of weight. When without it, you're going to crave carbohydrates and you're going to kind of get a little depressed in the winter. So I'm not sure everybody can quite put their finger on all these things. Of course, it's nice to be on the radio and tell people about it so they get an idea what's causing their weight maintenance problem.
And, of course, you're pointing out, really, that people who live in the higher latitudes where they have, certainly in the wintertime, they have less and less sun, they're going to have more of a problem with the weight, aren't they?
Well, they certainly are. Depression is an issue. Carbohydrate craving is an issue. Don't forget, in the northern climates, this is also where we have the prostate and the breast and the colon cancer belt of the world, and it's related to vitamin D. In fact, we think supplemental vitamin D might be a way to help us maintain our weight a little better because it handles our thyroid gland, and I'm not sure everybody understands just what the thyroid gland does. Let's make it simple. The thyroid gland is the thermostat for your body, so if you turn the thermostat up, you burn more calories, and that's why we see women who, in particular this strikes women, when their thyroid gland isn't working well and they have hypo or low thyroid, why then you see them, you know, gaining weight tremendously, and they can eat two soda crackers and gain weight. So you need to check your thyroid gland. Modern medicine abandoned an old reliable method where you could do this at home by relying on blood tests, and a lot of times the doctors miss this. The blood tests are not quite so accurate, and if you'll get up in the morning, lay still, have a little thermometer at your bedside and put it under your arm, in your armpit, the axillary temperature, sit there still for about 5 minutes, don't move around, that'll raise your temperature, and if your axillary temperature is under 98 degrees, You may have low thyroid, especially if it's accompanied by weight gain and you're feeling cold, those kinds of things, fatigue. Then you may need to be seen about getting, of course, some thyroid hormone because possibly your thyroid gland is not working. Modern medicine doesn't do a good reason of explaining why women gain weight why do they have so many women with the thyroid problem? And I believe it's iron related. I do believe that somehow here, women are the ones that are low in iron, not the men. And, of course, somehow here they may either get low in fat or low in iron, trying to diet one way or the other, and then, of course, they run into this problem. Their thyroid gland collapses, and it's not working anymore. One of the things I do tell women about is Synthroid, the synthetic drug they sell you at the doctor's office. For quite some time, the FDA woke up to the idea it wasn't even working, and they had changed the formula a number of times. I'm not a real fan of Synthroid. There was a natural type of thyroid hormone being used called Armour Thyroid. I know the doctors kind of look the other way and want to sell you the synthetic, but you might ask the doctor about Armour Thyroid if you're having trouble making Synthroid work for you. So There's all kinds of little tips here. Of course, it's on my website at askbillsardi.com, and the title of my report is How to Overcome the Weight Monster. And it gives you more specific information about things maybe you can do. It tells you about the medicines that we now use, of course, for weight control. There's two or three types of medicines that they use. It's interesting that drugs that are used to treat obesity and so on are antidepressants. And, of course, depression and weight gain seem to kind of go hand in hand. We were talking about seasonal depression and carbohydrate craving just a minute ago. So these things kind of go along with each other. Women have to know about their hormones. If their estrogen levels aren't adequate and they're collapsing, then they may end up with some problems of depression, mental depression. These are the women who grow a little facial hair, have polycystic ovary syndrome, certainly may not have sufficient estrogen levels. So that's another area to look into. One of the things I was interested in when I was just looking through the medicines that they try and sell you or prescribe for you at the doctor's office for weight control is that one of them here, there's a couple of classes of these, and appetite inhibitors and stimulants and so on, but one of the drugs here is goes by the name of sibutramine, which is really, I think, Meridia is the common name for it. And, of course, there's some side effects to that one, and you could have high blood pressure, and that might cause strokes and so on. But they're saying, well, we justify the use of the drug because the risks, the health risks from being terribly overweight are greater than the risks from this drug. And I put up a red flag immediately and said, gee, that's what all of our friends were saying in the natural medicine area about ephedra. Remember this drug, this herbal weight remedy that, of course, has been in the news lately, is causing a few heart attacks and so on. Certainly ephedra is not without problems. It has health risks and so on. But the people promoting this, of course, were saying, look, there's lots of problems from health problems from obesity, and maybe we can get along with ephedra. I think the problem with ephedra is it gets misused. There's no doctor supervising. People can run down to the doctor, to the health food store right away, and of course they can get some and overuse it, ignore the label, trying to fit into that dress for a wedding, trying to get ready for the the beach season or something like this to fit into a bathing suit. And so they can overdo ephedra, which is a stimulant. If you'll drink 10 cups of very strong Turkish coffee, you'll overstimulate your heart and it'll begin to flutter. And that's what happens with ephedra. It's a stimulant. It does increase metabolism, but it can have some effects on the heart and the adrenal glands and so on. So it's not without risk, but I just wake up everybody that what modern medicine wants to do, they're trying to, this week in Congress, to declare obesity a disease, get your insurance to pay for it, and of course they want ephedra off the market because it takes the world's best lean body mass agent, which in this case is an herb. They want to take it off the market because they want to make sure that you need to go to the doctor. And believe me, in two or three years, ephedra will be used again. It's just going to be at the doctor's office and cost you three times more. So, unfortunately, self-care in this area is not being promoted. They want you to go to the doctor, which is just going to drive up health care costs. We've got to find some ways to control all this without all running to the doctor. I know some people are struggling with this. I know it's not easy to just go out and start exercising when you're way overweight, your knees are hurting, you could get in trouble orthopedically and so on. So it's really a challenge for some people. I found in my literature search here that they found an effective way to help people is to buy something called a pedometer, which is you just put this around your ankle and it counts the number of steps you take. And they're saying you can kind of increase it, but as you get up to 10,000 steps a day, takes about 15 or 20 minutes to do that of walking, but that's all you really need in a day, and you'll start pushing off about 300 calories a day, which over a year makes a great big difference. Understand, we're consuming in the last 30 or 40 years, United States, people here and in all the advanced countries of the world, have increased their calorie consumption by about 800 or 900 calories a day. And, of course, this is where our problem is. 30, 40 years ago, we didn't have anywhere near the portion sizes or the calories that we ate. And, of course, we were a little more active physically. And, of course, this is how we're getting in this jam. If the average American's consuming 3,700 calories, well, there must be somebody out there consuming 5,000 calories. So the 5,000-calorie man is out there, and, you know, it's just it's the way we're going with our sedentary lifestyle. I certainly know. I'm a writer. I sit in a chair most of the day. So, you know, it gets to where we can start gaining weight quite easily and becomes a real trouble. I think for people looking for little remedies, remember that every time they do one of these studies on what works for weight control, it's always reduce calories plus a planned exercise program. And then if they use a fat blocker or a starch blocker or something, it's that thing helped in a little bit more, maybe helped you lose five more pounds. What people want to do is skip the exercise, skip the calorie stuff, and just have one thing magically take away their weight. It's not going to happen. You need to do all of these things. I will tell people that cayenne pepper, if you look up the literature, cayenne pepper, you find this in Tabasco sauce and other things. Cayenne pepper will increase your metabolism and your calorie burning by about 23% or so, and you notice some societies like in Thailand there, they eat hot, spicy foods, and of course they look rather lean, so I just pointed out maybe that's something that might help you a little bit. Grapeseed extract seems to mimic some of the effects of what we call a fat blocker, and seems to work quite safely. It inhibits the enzyme called lipase that helps us absorb fats, but it seems to do so in a safe way, and maybe that's going to be a new thing that we learn more about. That was just in the Journal of Nutrition last month, and of course that's helpful. I think a lot of people are reaching for things like human growth hormone, chromium supplements, something called CLA, conjugated linoleic acid. Those aren't working. We don't see much encouragement there, so we do tell you about some of these other things, and of course green tea has been added to the list. Everywhere I went in China, whether it was a bus driver or someone who was a secretary, they were drinking their green tea, and they're known to be quite lean in China, even though in many areas the calorie consumption is quite high. So I do advise people, drink green tea, even if you get decaffeinated green tea. It's not the stimulant effect. There's other properties in there that will help you lose weight. You need all of these little tips, drinking green tea, adding a little hot spices to your foods, maybe increasing your physical activity just a little bit. We need every tip we've got because America's losing the war. I've got studies here on my desk showing about 40% of Americans are eating fast food. We're going to lose the war, and as I keep talking here this evening, we're going to tell you about some things that may help you reverse your way out of this a little bit as far as the health effects go. But certainly America's losing. We're eating more donuts. When we say we're eating the 5 servings of fruits and vegetables, we're really eating iceberg lettuce and French fries and things like that that are still not great for us. They count as vegetables, oddly. So Americans have some real learning to do to change their diets and so on. I know we're not going to go back to homemade foods. We don't have the time. We're eating processed foods. We're eating foods that are prepared for us. The Center for Science in the Public Interest just published a report this week, and it's quite a whopper. They're trying to get restaurants to post the amount of calories in their dishes, and one dish stood out in particular, and that was cheese fries. If you go down the restaurant, you get an order of cheese fries. That was 3,100 calories in just one dish. Some people get that as a side dish, so dinner's soon to follow after that. That's a whole day's calories in just one meal. I think chicken wings and those deep-fried onions that they serve at some of the restaurants, they were nearly 2,000 calories apiece. So, boy, you got to watch what you're eating, and I think if you knew the number of calories in some things, you know, you could find an easy substitute. So lots of things to learn.
Well, we're going to have to take a little break here. When we get back, I'd like to talk about some of these wonderful things that we're told about, and I don't think they're probably very wonderful. Some of them, of course, used to be cellulose. They would sort of expand in your stomach and give you that full feeling. Then there were the fat blockers and the starch blockers, and I was always concerned about the complications of those as far as blocking the fat-based enzymes. Like A and D, but we'll be back in just a moment here with Bill Seide and cover more of these other issues. And of course, welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Bill Seide, who's a health journalist who has researched all of these issues we've been talking about. And, you know, Bill, a few years ago, I remember that they would give you these cellulose tablets, and they'd say, well, they'll swell up in your stomach, and they may give you that full feeling. And then, of course, the fat and the starch, these starch blockers, where do they fit into the armamentarium, or should they be avoided?
Well, I think they should be avoided. We have to be careful about fat blockers. Remember, the body is tuned to fat. Of course, this is how they get us to make things taste good down at McDonald's and Burger King and so on. So they overdo that. But understand, the body is programmed for that because we need fats to maintain our hormone levels. We need fats to maintain cholesterol. Understand, cholesterol is something essential for life. Helps us lubricate our skin and so on, so it's very important. We certainly need fats for our nervous system, especially the omega-3 oils and fats that we get from flax and fish oil. So the body craves fat for a darn good reason. And by the way, you're going to see the Atkins diet. It has a high fat content, and you still lose weight. So believe me, the body is programmed for that. We can overdo that. But the fat blockers, we have nutrients that are fatty. And what they found is that beta-carotene and vitamin A and vitamin D, these are the fatty nutrients. And if you start taking the fat blockers, you start losing those essential vitamins. Even in one study, even when they gave the supplemental fatty, fat-soluble vitamins along with the fat blockers to make sure you didn't get a deficiency, you still ended up deficient in vitamin D. So you have to be careful with these things. I'm not real excited for a time, for a short period of time, maybe you're going to get away with it, but you need to be careful. If you are dieting, I suggest that everyone get a good multivitamin just to make sure they're getting everything well covered as far as their nutrients, and they may not have as many, you know, hunger pangs and so on. I think one of the interesting and kind of cute things when you really think about it is when you look at food cravings. Women have more food cravings than men. By far, the most craved food is chocolate. Women outnumber men in chocolate craving. And when does all that occur? It occurs at the time of the month when women begin, when the cycle comes on. I think women don't realize that their food craving is attached to that. So they did a survey and found out most women didn't link their monthly cycle with their food cravings. And the reason why they crave chocolate, and of course chocolate helps regulate the mood quite well as it has lots of magnesium in it, and the need for magnesium increases as the monthly cycle is onset. And of course women need to know that they feel tense and tight and having cramping. It's a sign that they need more magnesium and not necessarily calcium. Women will take calcium with it. You need the muscle relaxing property of just plain magnesium. And so if you go down to the health food store and you're getting some magnesium capsules, magnesium oxide is so poorly absorbed you might as well not buy them. So any other form but magnesium oxide would help you. And of course it's a great, wonderful thing for women to find magnesium in their life because it takes a lot of tension out of the monthly cycle and relaxes muscles and lots of things. And for all of you dieting and using stimulants, I don't know why they didn't tell people this, but stimulants and coffee and various things tend to cause trouble, and your heart may flutter. And if you're having heart flutters for
hang on to that thought for just a moment. We're bringing on our stations again. Well, Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty and our guest Bill Sardi. We've been talking about the importance of magnesium on our diet and especially for women and the premenstrual period. And I remember when I went to medical school, the only thing I ever heard magnesium was good for was preeclamptic convulsions during pregnancy. And yet in the years that have followed, we hear more and more about magnesium being very, very important for a well-balanced diet and its effect as far as muscle cramps, etc. So go ahead, pick up the story there.
Well, 80% of Americans are deficient in magnesium. If you're having signs of muscle spasming, migraines, eyelid twitches, heart flutters, backaches, leg cramps, constipation, try some magnesium. It's wonderful for your life. Most Americans are deficient in magnesium. A little supplemental magnesium will help you. You'll go down to the health food store, and then they'll talk you into taking twice as much calcium. You'll never find an answer to your problems. Calcium constricts muscles. Magnesium relaxes them. So just find a magnesium capsule on its own, and ladies, begin to take them more when at the time of the monthly cycle. I think you'll find some real answers for yourself there. And so it's wonderful to find magnesium in your life, and we've shortened that, the consumption of magnesium in our foods. It's been depleted over the last 100 years or so. We used to get 500 milligrams of magnesium a day. There's only 200 or 300 milligrams in our diet now. That's due to a change the way we use fertilizers and so on. So we're missing magnesium, and it's the number one reason for sudden death heart attack is a lack of magnesium, particularly in males. So make everyone aware, get the magnesium in your life.
And, of course, the reason for it is without magnesium, you tend to go into a cardiac irregularity in your...
That's right.
Heart is not beating properly, and it's
right.
A fibrillation.
It's just another muscle spasm, and, of course, people have these irregular heart rhythms and fibrillation. We call it atrial fibrillation. We tell people many times, just get some magnesium. Your problem will probably go away. A little fish oil won't hurt you either. I know we show when we're talking about weight loss and all these things, every time you look at it, grains come into the study because they're talking about fiber, and you need to be careful to sort out fiber from grains. You need whole grains if you're going to get them, and they certainly work. They help you with weight maintenance. I strongly suggest if you're going to use them as something to add fiber to your diet, get some flaxseed meal. This is crushed flaxseed. Not the flaxseed oil, that's wonderful for you, but there's some properties there. It's high in fiber, high in something called lignans, which is a plant estrogen-like molecule, good for protecting us from prostate and breast cancer. And, of course, it has some ways of controlling iron, and which is important as you move along in life and so on. So there's some wonderful nutrients there. Flaxseed meal, about a tablespoon a day. The Barleans company makes a wonderful product, Fortiflax, and you'll see Barleans on the internet and in your health food stores. They make a wonderful flaxseed meal product that's quite inexpensive. So,
how does it taste? Is it palatable?
Oh yes, it's palatable. Most people add it to cereal or something because it's kind of powdery. But you could even take it straight off if you wanted to, just out of the spoon. But it's a little dry that way. But you know, it flaxseed meal, it will give you all of your omega-3 oils, all of your fiber. It'll give you your phytoestrogens, your plant estrogens. And, of course, it has some iron-controlling agents and some other wonderful nutrients in it. So it's a wonderful thing if you're trying to add fiber to your diet. You want whole grains. This is certainly a whole grain. So it's a wonderful thing. For ladies trying to prevent breast cancer, you certainly want a tablespoon of flaxseed meal every day. It beats the flaxseed oil, so there's reasons for that. So just something to learn. When we talked about weight loss, of course, this is all on my website at AskBillSardi.com, how to overcome the weight monster. And you see a little section in there on MSG, and it's just something we want to remind you of, that weight gain is kind of programmed into America, but the kind of foods that we have, the way they process our foods, the way they add salt and sugar, all of our breads have sugar added to them. If they didn't, they'd be called sourdough. So we've gotten so used to bread having sugar and so on. So They put MSG in our foods, and it helps us gain weight. So try to find foods without MSG.
And, of course, not only that, but the MSG really do have an impact on the brain cells, too, as I remember.
Absolutely. Brain and retinal cells. It's terrible. We give you a little reference to that there in my report.
And these are excitotoxins and phenylalanines, and you're really so much better without them. But that's another subject. We'll get into that in just a moment here. And if you'd like to give us a call, we're going to take a short break here, but give us a call at 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. If you have a question or comment, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that we're going to be having a conference here in the Monterey Bay area. It's going to be on the 29th of November. It's 2 days after Thanksgiving. And Bill Sardi is going to be there talking about some of the really exciting things that are coming out now as far as health and longevity are concerned. We're going to be bringing Dr. Klink in from Southern California to talk about what's happening in the church. And to many, many people, well, they don't think there's anything happening in the church. Our church has changed. Maybe the music isn't quite as it used to be, but everybody's enjoying it. And well, maybe the message isn't quite what it used to be either, but it isn't as long, and we don't tend to fall asleep in church as much. But something strange is happening in the church today. The church, which should be the conscience of our community, would be speaking out on important issues. Well, all you need to do is see what's happening in America today and ask yourself, is the church doing a good job? And if not, why not? I think you'll be fascinated by what Dr. Klink has to say, and hope very much that you'll certainly be wanting to come. Now, the program is going to begin early in the morning. The first speaker begins shortly after 8:30, and nobody wanted to be the first speaker, so I drew the short straw. And I'll be speaking the first speaker and just about the last speaker, and we're going to have a panel, and Joan Paris will be there talking about the USA Patriot Act, and you need to understand this act because it is a direct attack on the Bill of Rights, the Constitution of the United States, and everything you've been told about it has been a lie. It has nothing to do with terrorism. There's not one mention of Islamic terrorism, and this law is being used for all sorts of things having nothing to do with terrorism. It's being used for against drug smugglers. It's being used against anybody they want to use it against, and simply depriving them of constitutional rights. You'll be fascinated by what Joan has to say. You'll be fascinated by Brad Dacus. Anyway, we hope that many of you will decide you're going to come. And we have to know ahead of time. We're not going to take people at the door this time because we're going to be serving lunch. And last time we had real problems. Some people didn't get any lunch at all. And so if you're planning on coming, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. It's going to be a full day. It's going to be an exciting time. And all you have to do is give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 and sign up to come. And, of course, you bring your friends, you bring your family. The more people we have, why, the more opportunity you'll have to meet interesting people who are out across America working, trying to do something about what's happening here in America. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I was just telling our listeners here in the Monterey Bay area about the conference we're going to be having on the 29th of November. That's 2 days after Thanksgiving here in the Monterey Bay area. And if you'd like to know more about that, why, give us a call, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. It's all-day-long conference. Hope it'll, I think you'll have an excellent time if those people up in the Washington area are interested in coming. And if you are, why, we'll have to get you a map and a list of places where you can stay that wouldn't be too expensive. Now, we have one of our listeners who asked about genetically modified grains, whole grains versus genetically altered whole grains in contrast to just regular grains. Do you have any thoughts on that at all, Bill, before we go on?
Well, certainly in the natural products arena where I am, boy, everywhere you go, we all ask, no GMO, no GMO. You know, we want to know if there's, you know, there's no genetically modified grains here. We don't want any of that, where they're genetically modifying these. You know, in some cases, they've shown some premature studies showing they can insert a little gene in there and make these hardier and better, which may be okay in certain sense, but what they're actually doing is trying to lace the genetically inferior things in there. Nature works by diversity, not by making everything the same. And, of course, there's some issues there in what they're really playing around with. Eventually, they're going to try and make all of the drugs by inserting genes to produce drug molecules inside of plants. So we're concerned about that whole effort as well. So no GMO, please. Ask, beg, demand that all of your products have any genetically modified product in them. Try to get it the way nature made it, the way God has it. I know that we work every day to improve strains of things naturally. We graft things onto trees, and we cross certain types of apples and oranges and so on, so we get hardier ones. That's nature's way of doing it. We help it out a little bit, but there's no sense us doing some of these things that we're now doing. We're taking and fooling around. There was just a study released about a month ago showing all of these experiments should be abandoned, that they're harmful, and what we're doing is we're upsetting nature. We might have a hardier grain or fruit or whatever, but we have to understand that they're making these things, for instance, that they would repel insects and so on. That's fine, but then the insects don't have anything to eat and so on, so then we have pest infestation in a different way. We have various things. You think these things, of course, sound good for us, but you can upset the balance in nature quite easily. So birds wouldn't have food to eat and so on. So there's issues, and, of course, we need to be careful about what we're doing. So far, from what I can see, is no GMO. That should be our slogan.
And it's interesting that the Europeans are, they're not going to have them, and they're refusing to import our genetically modified foods. And people say, well, I mean, aren't we making great progress? You're stopping progress. The problem is, if you don't understand what they're doing, they're taking perhaps a gene from a fish and use it as a carrier to put something into a plant that you're going to be ingesting, and some of these are cancer-producing. And people say, well, they wouldn't put it in there if it was going to harm us, would they? Certainly not. Well, they don't know. They don't have the long-term studies. I remember the first polio vaccine they put out, the Salk polio vaccine. And it was about 5 years after they had given millions and millions and millions of doses to people, not only all throughout America, but all throughout the world, when they suddenly discovered that it had a cancer-producing monkey virus in it. So, you know, then, of course, they could never tell the American people that because, well, think of the lawsuits. Think the people wouldn't trust the government anymore. They wouldn't trust vaccines. And look at all the good vaccines have done. So they simply lied to the American people since then. And an awful lot of people now are dying of the cancers produced by SV40, the cancer-producing virus they got in the polio vaccine. We don't know what the long-term end results of GMOs are. And I certainly agree with Bill, having read and studied this, seeing what's happening over in Europe, and Europe is saying, we're not going to take your products. Well, either the Europeans are stupid and we're very smart, or the Europeans are right and we're very stupid. And having seen what they've done here again and again and again, I'll bet on the Europeans. And I don't think that I agree totally. So you pick up the story from there, Bill.
Well, of course, we need to have good, wholesome, clean foods. We got that in the Pure Food and Drug Act in the early 1900s. We cleaned up our water with chlorine. It's a very toxic molecule, but it wiped out cholera and typhoid and dysentery, three major diseases, just by chlorinating our water. But as we got water clean, we also drink it every day. The chlorine then gets accumulates in our bladder and our rectum and in our gastric tract, and so we end up in our kidneys. So we end up with about 20,000 cases of bladder and kidney cancer every year from having the chlorine in our water. So I do advise everybody, as far as clean water and so on, is to filter it or get bottled water and make sure you do that.
Now, let me just put a plug in for the big Berkey water filters.
Oh, absolutely.
The big Berkey will take out most of the chlorine, so will the Berkey Light. And not only will it taste better, but you'll get rid of this very toxic substance. If you want to know anything more about that, you can go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. A great, great product. And why bother buy bottled water when you can use your own water and, of course, get all the impurities out of it? So I'll just pick up from there, Bill.
Well, absolutely, and we don't think of it even for our pets. We need to, you know, our pets have smaller organs, and they drink water, and they're more at risk. So be careful, Larry. Why don't you do the same for your pets, too? Make sure you have a good water filter in your house. So we've been talking about weight loss tonight. It's a big subject for America. We're gaining lots of weight as we move along in life. And while we've been encouraging you to maintain good, healthy weight control, we will advise you that if you're going on a low-fat diet, if you're trimming down in your calories, you may be setting yourself up for gallstones. And, of course, one study showed that people went on a low-fat diet, about 55% of them developed gallstones. You may have a gallbladder attack. How do you know you're having one? Well, if you've got a sharp pain, like a knife right in the center of your chest, kind of, down by your tummy, then, you know, right after you're eating, you've got a gallstone attack. And what is the gallbladder? But it's just a little organ that holds bile, which we need when we eat fats. It's a squirt gun. It squirts bile into the stomach. And, of course, when there's gallstones that get caught in the entryway, then as it squeezes down, it causes pain. As you're losing weight, those cholesterol stones tend to congeal and get harder and firmer and bigger. And, of course, you have all kinds of problems. So actually they found if people would go on a low-calorie diet but not necessarily a low-fat diet, you would avoid, it sounds like the Atkins diet, you would avoid a great many of the gallstones and so on. If you need to cleanse your gallbladder, if you're having a pain on your right side right underneath your ribs, or you're having this sharp pain, or you're having a gas and indigestion and air and gas and indigestion, especially at night, then you didn't handle your fats and oils very well, and you may have a gallbladder problem. And, of course, read my report at AskBillSardi.com. It tells you a natural way. You can get a little product there, and it dissolves the gallstones. This is not the olive oil flush, which is quite uncomfortable and so on, that natural medicine is used for some time. Just some natural ingredients that's taken from apples and pears and other food supplements that'll actually just dissolve your gallstones. So if you have that kind of a problem, well, you might look into that as an answer for those kind of problems. So, of course, something fascinating, something new, something wonderful. We'll be talking more about it at the conference beginning here in November. But at the end of November. But of course, is the subject of how do we activate something I now call the reversal factor? What's happening in France is they're eating as many calories as we are and more. They have a higher cholesterol on average than we do. They have more fats in their diet. Yet they have about one-third of the cardiovascular disease that we do here in the United States. People subscribing to a Mediterranean diet in Europe, for every four North Americans who have a heart attack or a stroke, only one European on a Mediterranean diet. And yet they still have fats and calories in their diet. What is it that they're doing? This became the French paradox. This was on 60 Minutes in 1991. And, of course, the secret now that we're becoming aware of course, actually a Bible cure was a glass of red wine in moderation. There's a little molecule in red wine called resveratrol. We like to call it reversatrol. And what it's doing is, it's lowering our cholesterol, raising our good HDL cholesterol, cleaning out our arteries, preventing blood clots, and it's actually, bringing about greater health and longevity if we can learn how to capture this. I never thought I'd be telling anybody, let alone Christians, and even talking to myself here, to drink a glass of red wine, but because I've been pretty much a teetotaler all my life, essentially confining alcohol mostly to social occasions and toasting to someone, some special occasion. But what we do find is that people who are teetotalers don't have the same health as people who drink at least a glass of red wine every day, maybe a couple of glasses, preferably with your meals. If you're having wine, if you'll have a little food on your stomach first and then take your wine, you won't get as buzzed with it. You won't have the headache sometimes people get from wine. But what we find is that people that drink a couple of glasses of red wine a day are far healthier, have fewer strokes, heart attacks, and so on. In fact, in France, after a heart attack, they gave a group of men two glasses of red wine a day, and it reduced the risk of a second heart attack by 59%. It was incredible. And I bring to you a little story on my website, and it's talking about a little town called Rosetto, Pennsylvania. This came into public view in the 1950s and 60s. It's in the journal American Medical Association in 1966. This little town of Rosetto, Pennsylvania, comprised primarily of Italian immigrants, essentially had a mortal heart attack rate that approached zero. And this went on for decades. They had no heart attacks there at all. Eventually, over the years, the sociologists got a hold of this problem. They were trying to study it. There were close family ties there. These were hard-working people, but they had large, bulging waistlines. They loved to eat pasta. They were breaking all the rules. But the men and the women there drank three glasses of red wine a day on average. They were immigrants. They were used to drinking the wine. They didn't have the health problems associated with the diet they were eating because they were activating the reversal factor, the red wine. And, it, of course, this is in red wine more so than in white wine, which is why we recommend this. But this all got missed. The sociologist said that over time the heart attack rate went up because it was a breakdown of the close family ties. It had nothing to do with it. It had everything to do with the red wine. French paradox actually was preceded by Rosetto, Pennsylvania. And of course this was puzzling at the time. It became another one of those paradoxes that now we understand in our modern understanding of what was going on. There's a miracle, a magic molecule. You only need a few milligrams of it in red wine called resveratrol, and it does some wonderful things to make you healthy. So, in moderation, as the Bible prescribes, by the way, the Bible always talked about the dangers of overconsumption of alcohol and wine, and actually a lot of it was mingled wine. They took and watered it down a little bit to prevent inebriation and so on. So, the problem is man doesn't have good judgment. Noah, in his days, the first thing when he landed his ark was to build an altar to the Lord, and the second thing, he built a vineyard. So wine and grapes were very important, but then it's recorded he's the first advertised drunk in the Bible, so he overconsumed. So it's very easy to do. If you can find ways to keep this in moderation, as many of the communities do in the Mediterranean area. And I'll make people aware that the oldest person ever to have lived in the modern era, a French lady, lived 122 years, had a glass of red wine every night. The oldest man ever recorded in modern times lived 115 years, had a glass of red wine or two every day. He was from Sardinia, an island off of Italy. The oldest couple in the world is from China. They're both over 100 years old. They both make their own homemade wine and drink it every night. So I'm telling you there are some secrets to health and longevity, and it's the secret of extracts. Wine or alcohol ferments and pulls out the secret little molecule called resveratrol. All of our herbal extracts and health food stores are extracts of alcohol. They pull it out, and that's the little secret. The fermentation process pulls it out. It's then bottled in a bottle that's airtight. The resveratrol, this little reversal molecule in red wine, is retained, it's stabilized, and it's preserved as long as there's no air there, and that's the magic of a wine bottle, and that's why we don't see this working in resveratrol pills or even in grapes, because we haven't extracted it, you see, whereas fresh grapes give us a little bit. It's just very little. Raisins don't give us much. Grape juice doesn't give us anything because they've pasteurized it. So I get all these questions on the Internet all the time. But it's red wine. There's very, very little resveratrol in de-alcoholized red wine, but you might try it. There's some there. So some lessons for us to learn. These really came from the Bible, and I think it's quite humorous, but researchers at Harvard recently found now that what resveratrol in red wine does is mimic the healthy properties that we know that are produced by calorie restriction. So if you work to control your cholesterol, you're going to add about 6 months to your life. If you exercise every day from middle age on, you're going to add about a year and a half to your life. If you reduce all the risk factors, don't smoke, control your weight and your cholesterol and so on, you'll add about 5 to 8 years to your life. If you're a female and not a male, you'll have better control of iron in your body because of menstruation throughout most of your life, and so therefore you'll live another 5 to 8 years over the males. You'll have an advantage. But if you severely restrict your calories, watch them very carefully and get way down, about a 40% reduction in the calories we now eat, then you'll see an expansion of the human lifespan by about 30 to 50 years. Now, that's remarkable. What the scientists at Harvard are telling us is that resveratrol, this molecule in red wine, mimics the calorie restriction. I'm bringing up two things to you. One is the Bible taught fasting, which today we call calorie restriction. It also recommended wine in moderation. I don't believe it's any surprise to us that people way back in early Bible times lived so long because they practiced fasting. They practiced, these were wine cultures in Mesopotamia and Egypt and Greece and so on. They all had these little amphora jars where they knew how to make wine and make it all airtight to preserve the resveratrol, otherwise it would turn to vinegar. So they had airtight seals on these jars, these clay jars that they made. And of course, we're told, of course, by the evolutionists and by others that the early Earth history was more moist at the early times in Earth history. And, of course, moisture causes more funguses to grow. Grapes then make more resveratrol. It's a way to defend grapes against a fungal attack. And therefore, the wine that was produced way back when Noah and Adam and all the wonderful Bible characters that we read about, Methuselah and so on, were reported to have lived so long. They may have drank wine, and they certainly may have had a lot more of this wonderful molecule called resveratrol in their diet, and that might have been the reversal or longevity factor that is responsible for some of the longevity we read in the Bible. So
tell our listeners up there in the Great Northwest, if you want to give us a call, we have a few more minutes. The number would be 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Go ahead, Bill. I just wanted to the people know they could call in if they wanted to with the 8 or 9 minutes we still
have. By the way, for your Northwestern listeners, in the Northwest, Oregon, Washington, or on the East Coast, New York, or our Canadian friends, that's where more moisture is, where grapes are grown and they have more fungal attack, and therefore the wines that are grown in those areas are richer in this resveratrol molecule. The Pinot Noir type of grape seems to produce more of resveratrol. The red wines, Pinot Noir, grown in Oregon, Washington, those areas would be richer in resveratrol. Just a little tip to the wise consumer there. So be careful how you consume alcoholic beverages. The risk of liver cirrhosis and so on is still the same. So there are problems. But we're going to learn, because America's getting fatter and fatter, we're going to have to learn how to utilize the reversal factor that the French are using The French paradox is the red wine, and they're escaping many of the terrible health effects of overconsumption of food and calories. So we're going to have to learn how to activate it ourselves, not be so afraid. Of course, one of the things that was really recommended in the Bible, Jesus' first miracle in Canaan was, of course, with wine, water to wine. And, of course, wine is mentioned in the Bible numerous times and so on. Of course, there's lots of advice on how to use it carefully. So even Hippocrates said wine was good, but you had to use it in moderation. So lessons that we're all learning, and, of course, we're becoming more sedentary. We have more ways, automobiles, and somebody sent me a picture the other day on the internet. It was an entrance to a gym, someplace you go to exercise, and there were these escalators up to the front door. It's kind of so you could get up there easily instead of steps. We're taking it easy even up to the gym. So it's kind of just only in America. It's our own little phenomena here, but we are facing a tremendous problem. I know a lot of times, and I address this on in my report, we blame it on our genes. We say, well, I must have bad genes because I just eat two pieces of something and I gain a lot of weight. I think maybe we're fooling ourselves there a little bit, because we see a man and a wife get married. They don't share common genes, and yet they look very similar after a time. And that's because it's familial. They're sitting down at the same table doing the same thing. So, we need to be careful about what we say. Understand, if we're going to get a hold of this thing, there are some things we can do. Even if they're little things, they count. And, of course, I think we're a little timid about getting started in these things, but they're always helpful to us. And I even told you tonight how to get away with overeating if you'll just activate the reversal factor. So there's always some way here you can pick up a tip of something that you can use, for better health and longevity as you go along. Of course, all these wonderful things prescribed in the Bible, we're just catching up to them now. So I'm remarked at all these wonderful things that now become apparent to us.
Well, let's go ahead and get your website out again so our listeners up in the Northwest will know how to get your website. It's at AskBillSardi.com.
Well, for all of you who support Radio Liberty, you can go there. It'll allow you. So,
anyway, that's S-A-R-D-I. That's AskBillSardi.com. And you have links to the other websites where you have those wonderful books about the Bible and the power of God, the power of healing.
Yeah. Well, we do have a new book out, The Bible Prescription for Health and Longevity. It's a short little book, not expensive. I have a wonderful little book, The Power of Healing, The Power of God. And, of course, we have some other new books, the New Truth About Vitamins and Minerals and so on. For people who like to read books, we're trying to give it away to you here or on the website. You can get all this information, a lot of information for free. There's no commercials there. There's information about weight control. There's information about autism, information about cholesterol, hormone replacement therapy for females. Lots of wonderful reports you'll want to download. There's a whole book there you can download and read, The Collapse of Conventional Medicine. So it's all good information. It's there, and it's just for you. There's no obligations. Just go there. You don't even have to sign in. Just
let's go to Nick quickly, because we're almost through the hour, and maybe Nick can stay until the next end of the next hour. But Nick, did you have a quick question or comment?
Yeah, real quick question. What about the effect of spraying of grapes with fluoride? And I'll hang up and wait for the answer.
All right, fine.
Thank you. I haven't heard of that yet, but spraying grapes with things is, they're trying to do that for various reasons. Actually, they're trying to make the grapes make more resveratrol, not with fluoride, but by shining ultraviolet light on it, or anything that would kind of stress the grape, and then it would make more resveratrol and we'd have healthier grapes and wine. So.
Well, maybe we can talk a little bit more about that when we get back the next hour. But this is the time I have to say goodbye to our listeners up in the Great Northwest and ask them to pray for America, to pray for revival. But please remember to pray for our ministry, Radio Liberty. And remember, if you'd like to get in touch with us, our number 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to get copies of the tapes of the programs or other material, radioliberty.com. And then, of course, remember Bill's website, AskBillSardi.com. And so until tomorrow, when we'll be back with you once again, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you. Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And feel free to call at any time. Our guest this evening, Bill Sardi, who's a health journalist and a health researcher. And before we went to the break, we had a call from Nick over in Carmel who wanted to know about spraying grapes with fluoride. And perhaps he's concerned about the real fluoride danger, because fluoride is a very standard spray that's being used on grapes to supposedly cut down an insect infestation, but also gives a tremendous amount of fluoride if you're drinking grape juice, if you're eating grapes. Grape products will have the fluoride carried over into it. And, of course, there are very deleterious effects of fluoride on the body, on the metabolism, on the enzymes, and on the mind. And I sort of suspect that's really what Nick was concerned about, was the fact that so many of our grapes and so many of our foodstuffs are sprayed with fluoride products. Have you looked into that at all?
You know, I haven't looked into the fluoride aspect, and I'll have to, but I don't agree with using fluoride. Apparently, this industrial mineral, chemical, whatever we want to call it, they're trying to find uses for it, and it doesn't belong there. And it does get into the human system short term. Of course, you see it being used for dental applications and kind of hardening the teeth and filling the spaces so we don't get the cavities and so on when we're kids. But you see a thing called fluorosis, and that is they don't have a real good way of figuring out how much you're going to get, and your children end up with mottled teeth. This is going on all over the world. And, of course, if it's bothering your teeth like that, it's going to bother your bones. And what happens is, in the beginning, your bones are nice and hard with fluoride, and over time they begin to soften and cause troubles, even in growing children. So we're concerned about this blatant overuse of fluoride. It's something that's being used, you know, by farmers and people that don't really have an understanding what it means in the food chain. So these are not medicine people, and so, you know, they don't have an understanding of the consequences down the line. So we don't like fluoride into the food chain at all. It doesn't belong there. It's a non-essential mineral. Doesn't have a place here for us. We'll get tiny amounts in the foods we eat and so on, but we don't need to add it to our toothpaste and all these other things. There's other ways to do all this. So unfortunately, I think the commercial interests went out here, and they do these things, and of course, they're not even telling us they're doing.
And even more foolish is the fact that they're actually adding this to the water supply all over the country. It is such a toxic substance that the companies that produce this, these would be the fertilizer companies, the aluminum companies, don't know what to do with the fluoride. It's a byproduct of aluminum manufacture, of fertilizer manufacture. It's extremely expensive to put into a landfill because it's so toxic. So they've come up with the most wonderful scam. You simply pay off the politicians, and then you mandate being put into water supplies. And if you, for our listeners out there, we have a 4-tape set on a water fluoridation. You need to hear it. You need to know what's going on. And I don't want to get off on that subject because that's not Bill's field. But right now we've got Cindy calling from Moses Lake. Hi, Cindy.
Hi.
Moses Lake, Washington. Cindy, good to have you with us.
Thank you.
Do you listen on a regular basis up there?
Yes, it just went off the air, and I thought, oh, I should call in and ask my question.
All right, go ahead. Well, you could have asked it while we were on the air, but maybe you didn't want to break the...
I had to find the phone number because I didn't get it written down fast enough.
All right, fine. Do you have a question for Bill?
Well, yeah, he was talking about drinking the red wine like a glass or two a day, and I didn't know nursing if it would be safe to do that or not.
Well, you know, actually, that's a good question, and, you know, for nursing moms, for growing kids, or any time you're growing something, you don't want any alcohol in the system, and you wouldn't want this molecule in the system. People ask me, this has longevity effects to prolong life tremendously. I mean, if you're catching, I was talking about obesity and weight management and so on, but this has the capacity of expanding the human lifespan by 30 to 50 years because it mimics what calorie restriction does. You can imagine what a big headline this is. But in about 30 days here, there will be, wonderfully, a resveratrol pill available to us. The ones you have in the food stores now, the health food stores, are biologically inactive. They've been tested at Harvard. But there will be a new one available, and it'll be possible for people to just take a pill that doesn't have any alcohol in it. But again, that wouldn't be recommended during pregnancy because you're trying to grow something there, and this has some anti-aging effects, and we're just not sure it's appropriate at that time. So, you know, people ask me, when does aging begin? Aging begins when growth has stopped. So, you know, around 18 or 20 or so, you're fully grown, and that's when really biological aging begins to set in. So, moms, you're going to have babies and grow something else in your body. So again, aging really sets in for you a little later after your childbearing years are over with. So that's kind of how this runs. And for people over age 40, why, that's probably who the red wine's for.
Okay, well, that answers my question then.
Uh-huh.
Okay, thank you.
You're more than welcome. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I've tried the red wines. I just don't especially like them. The Pinot Noir, I could probably drink. But when I'm doing 5 hours of radio a day and 2 hours in the evening, I can't very well have a glass of wine with dinner. I'm one of those people who's quite susceptible to them. And, you know, 2 glasses of red wine and we'd have slurred speech or maybe no programs at all. So
yeah.
That's why I'm really looking forward to
it. Well, it does put you to sleep nicely. It's a wonderful sedative for people that can't get to sleep at night, but I do suggest that everybody not just sit down in a restaurant or whatever and have the red wine served to them, that you get a little food, an hors d'oeuvre or something, and get that on your stomach, and then if you want a little wine, because it won't go right to your brain and cause all these effects, and you won't have the inebriation and so on. So I think it's important for people to understand how to use it. In the Mediterranean culture, it's table wine, you take it with food. So be careful about serving yourself too soon.
Well, I think it's fascinating that the pills are going to be available, you know, in the not-too-distant future. And one of the stories you've told, which really was so fascinating to me, was the two apples. Would you like to tell that? And because if this indeed is a valid observation of the ability to prolong the usefulness of food, and it's, you know, its viability will be a tremendous advantage.
Well, this resveratrol molecule is going to profoundly change human history. I don't know how else to say this. And of course, one of the questions that arises is, what will we do with humans who live 30 to 50 years longer in good health? What will we do? Who's going to pay the Social Security and the Medicare and all these things? Of course, this could have been said about penicillin and antibiotics many years, decades ago when that was invented. So we're going to have to deal with these consequences as we face them. But, of course, one of the questions came up, what about food supply? What would we do for food? And, of course, this wonderful resveratrol molecule seems to solve that problem on its own as well. And what they did is they took golden delicious apples, those nice yellow-looking apples that you see down at the store, and they took and dipped them once in a resveratrol solution. Put them out on a counter at room temperature for 7 weeks, along with some apples that weren't dipped in resveratrol. At the end of 7 weeks, you can imagine the undipped apples had lots of fungal growth. They were dark. They had collapsed. They didn't look like apples. And, of course, they were just unfit for any kind of human consumption whatsoever. The resveratrol-dipped apples looked untouched, perfect taste. You could put them in your mouth just like they freshly came off the tree. You see, this resveratrol molecule is an antifungal agent. And of course, when you put things in a refrigerator and then you keep them there too long, it's a fungus that grows and eventually, of course, breaks this down and spoils it. So it's possible, learning how to use this resveratrol molecule and producing it in large volume, that we would be able to, of course, increase the food supply on the planet by 30% easily. You're talking about preserving food without refrigeration. Can you imagine this? So the picture of this, as I read the study, was remarkable. It stood out. If you could see the picture, I'll be trying to show you these pictures at the seminar there when we have it here at the end of the month. But you'll see these remarkable pictures of these apples preserved in resveratrol. So we're on the cusp, or on the very edge of a tremendous new discovery that is going to change mankind. Forget my interpretation of it. I'm reading, and the experts who are telling me, I'm in the process of writing a book, which will go to the printer in 2 weeks, called The World's First Anti-Aging Pill. And, of course, we're talking about a tremendous technical breakthrough, understanding genetics and how our body repairs itself, and a reversing molecule that's always been around. It's in red wine, will soon be available in a dietary supplement without any alcohol content. But this is likely to profoundly change the future of mankind, because it mimics what calorie restriction does, and calorie-restricted animals and insects, even human beings, live about 30 to 50 years longer than other people. So the 100-year-plus lifespan is likely to become common. How the world is going to handle this kind of a challenge? What in the world will the politicians do with this? What about all the population control people? I haven't got all the answers. I do know there's likely to be lots of conflict, even the FDA trying to shut this idea down. The world deserves this molecule. We can live in health and longevity for rather a small cost. This is something that humanity, of course, has been waiting for. The geneticists at Harvard are bringing it to us. The odd thing is, it's nothing they cooked up. It's an all-natural molecule just obtained from the skin of grapes and other plants. And, of course, they've made synthetic varieties of it. But none of this, that'll make it a drug, and that would make it expensive, and that will make us wait 20 years before we ever see and can use it. So hopefully this will become available. The FDA won't step in and deprive humanity of it. There will be, of course, a tremendous demand, curiosity, and interest in it. And, of course, for the first time, we're going to have an anti-aging pill. This was discussed in Scientific American just a few months ago. They were saying, long about 1995, they realized, among credible scientists, that there might be a way to make a pill to help humans live longer. The human genome was finished. We understood the human genome only had about 30,000 genes in it. And then later on, we understood that certain aspects of human biological function are controlled just by one gene. In this case, longevity and survival. They found the gene that controls that. It's called the sirtuin-1 gene. It upregulates an enzyme, which then gives the cells in your body a lot longer time to repair themselves. The DNA gets repaired much better. The cell doesn't die. It goes into repair mode, which means that there's a greater cell survival, which ends up being a longevity mechanism. So there you have it. By the way, this molecule, resveratrol, triggers all this, and therefore, by the virtue of the fact that it helps all the DNA in your body repair itself, it becomes the definition of a cure-all. Virtually every disease could be cured through this one process because it is genetic mutation that's involved in every disease. So you're talking, when you give resveratrol to animals or put it in test tubes and test it in cells, you can see that it controls blood pressure, cholesterol, stops strokes, stops heart attacks. They even mimicked heart attacks in animals and deprived the heart of oxygen. And there was very little scarring in the heart as long as it was pre-treated with resveratrol. They did the same experiment in the brain. They deprived the brain of oxygen. They recreated a stroke in animals. There was no brain damage whatsoever. This is a remarkable molecule. It's a magic thing. You know, you only need about 10 milligrams of it. And it just turns on a process in your body that... of course, leads to survival and longevity, and that's what I get to write a book about, and I can tell you I'm sitting on the edge of my chair. I can't wait till I finish the book and share it with everyone. They're going to be curious as to what this is all about. We're entering into a new era in human history, and that is the ability to prolong human life and good health another 30 to 50 years.
Well, now, they've actually done the experiments on all sorts of animals, haven't they, and really significantly increased their length of life?
Yes, here's how that we try to present it in the book so everybody understands. There is a place in the world where people are calorie-restricting, and that's Okinawa. On the island of Okinawa off Japan, that is the poorest prefecture of Japan. They eat about 30% less calories than the rest of the Japanese, and the Japanese are eating about 800 or 900 less calories than we do here. So you can see that's quite a bit of calorie restricting. And through that, they're living longer there. They have about 20,000 people in Japan who are over the age of 100. This is dramatically going up every year there. Just 5 years ago, it was only 10,000. So it's a tremendous growth of the people. In the world, there's only 156,000 people estimated over the age of 100. This is due in the next 5 years to go up to from 156,000 to 500,000. And then in the next, whatever, it's going so fast it's hard to know, but we'll be over 1 million people in the world at the age of 100.
This is they're having real problems in Japan as far as funding their Social Security, their payment for people who are retired.
Right.
And, of course, we know here in the United States, when they brought in Social Security, the average person lived to be 65, so they said, you retire at 65, and then we'll pay you after that, knowing full well that half of the people would be dead by that time, and the other half would die fairly soon thereafter. Now, if you are able to prolong life, as we have here in the United States, so the average individual, I think, lives 77 or 78 years now, why, then the whole economic structure of these pensions begins to crumble. In Japan, if they're having that many people live over 100, every one of those has to be cared for. Every one of them has to have their Social Security and their health insurance. And Japan's whole social structure is beginning to fall apart. What you're describing, should it happen here in the United States, would do the same thing here and would speed up the demise of our entire safety net. Here in the United States, we eat so much, people are still dying at a fairly young age. I mean, 78 is young compared with somebody who's 100 years of age. But what you're suggesting is that resveratrol will tend to negate what we're doing to ourselves by overeating?
That's exactly right. And so now we have this example in Japan where they calorie restrict. So now do we have an example of the mimic, that is the resveratrol, the reversal factor, actually causing people, you know, humans, not just little animals in cages, Do we have that example somewhere? We certainly do. It's on the island of Sardinia off of Italy. There is an outbreak, you might say, of 100-plus-year-olds there, and they have quite a few people living beyond the age of 100, and they're not calorie-restricting. They're drinking an unusual red wine, the highest resveratrol content found anywhere on the planet. And, of course, as we look at the French are, in the wine-growing areas, are living 35 to 65% longer than the rest of the areas of France. So when you look at the life expectancy in France, it's a skewed number. You really have to pull a number out for how long people are living in the wine-growing areas. We know how to live over 100 years now. The question is, will the authorities ever even let us get there? We're on the precipice of introducing a new pill that will make this possible. And, of course, 85% of the world's countries have no pension plans whatsoever. It's the developed countries that face the burden. I will make everyone aware of this. We have three major pies in the United States budget. One quarter of it is Medicare, one quarter and health care. One quarter of it is Social Security. The other quarter is military spending. You figure it out. If people are going to live real long, where are we going to get the money from to take care of them? We can't fight wars anymore. And, of course, this is going to be the big issue. This is going to be the big fight, guns or butter. And this is just what's going to happen. And, of course, politicians, you know, they're used to building military spending. It's part of our economy. You just saw the President of the United States declare that the economy in the last quarter, which usually only jumps, even in a great period, of maybe 1.2% or so, he said that it jumped by 7% plus. That's because he threw all the military spending in there and counted that as a good economy. So, you see, we've got some problems. We live in a world where our leaders are caught in a time warp. They're still fighting wars instead of making peace. So we're going to be caught with all these older people, and that's why I wonder if they're going to let us live that long. It seems that we're going to be able to get access to these pills. We're certainly going to gain an understanding of how to use red wine. We're going to understand in a way that we can put our hands on the switch. In this case, it's a genetic switch, so that we can actually live for 100 years in some sort of a planned way. So this is possible now for humans to understand the mechanisms. And, of course, if you'd like to calorie restrict and just get down to a very, very Spartan diet, of course, that would make it possible, too. It's very hard to sell that idea. But at the very least is that we're going to need to learn how to use the reversal factor if we're not going to have all these health care costs and we're going to live in some kind of a reasonably healthy way, even though we're overweight and everything else, and that is to learn how to use this wonderful molecule called resveratrol. We find it in red wine. We're soon going to find it in dietary supplement, and it's going to profoundly change the future of human history.
But on the other hand, Bill, if it's as effective as you say it is, why we will not have, in all probability, a great deal of illness than we do, and so that will at least help as far as the Medicare.
It does help us with those costs, and as we calculate out the medical costs, now understand, Medicare costs, health care costs in the United States run about $3,000 a year. If we're avoiding the end-of-life money that we spend a great deal of that health care costs in the last year of life for many people, if we're avoiding that by 30 years, we're going to put off a lot of hundreds of millions, even billions of dollars of cost there for another time. On the other hand, the big expense is pensions, which run around $900 on average a month. So you're talking about over $10,000 a year. That's a bigger figure than the $3,000 for health care. And, of course, if you've got a significant number of people living beyond the age of 100, you've really got a problem on your hand here. Who's going to come up with the pension money? Now, I don't have all the answers. All I can say is we're entering a world where we need new types of leaders. We need leaders that are going to let change occur. And we can live in a better life. I became aware through listening to your radio program that something was being done to limit the lifespan here on Earth, that it could actually take a larger jump, but they weren't letting it occur. And, of course, part of this was through the World Health Organization trying to stunt the, you know, the births of babies and control the population. And so there's so many efforts to control our population, we don't realize it. And, of course, you know, I don't know that what we're going to do. There's so many people employed to control the world population. It's going to be very interesting to see what kind of fight, how this works out. The world is going to clamor for this. If we can just get the word out, they'll understand it. There's a lot of knowledgeable people, and, of course, I don't know if the politicians can hold off the swarm of people that will demand this kind of a change on our planet. Of course, this is all using mechanisms which, if you go back and read your Bible carefully, are described there. These are mechanisms that are now becoming apparent as to why the people way back in early Bible times lived so long. We're explaining more of this as we go on. Part of my book has to do with another little aspect of this mechanism inside our DNA or our genetics, and that is this little switch that gets turned on for survival and longevity is turned on by some sort of stress, some biological stress. In this case, starvation. We talked about calorie restriction or fasting. But another stress agent that can do this, apparently, is low-dose radiation. And, of course, I'm talking about it in my book. The United States, through the Environmental Protection Agency, sells us on the idea that radiation is bad for us. All of it's bad for us, no matter how little we get. They talk to us about having our homes tested for radon gas. You have radium in the crust of the earth. As the rocks break up, it sends off a gas, which is the gas of radium, is radon gas. And they try to tell us that radon gas is bad for us. Well, when you look at all the science, you're going to find that there's a little map we're going to show you here at the seminar at the end of the month. And if you take the radon, high areas of radon gas in the United States, there's a map. You can go get it from the Environmental Protection Agency. And you take that map and you overlay it on the areas of high and low cancer incidence in the United States, you'll see that the areas of high radon gas exposure are the areas of low cancer rates. My gosh, radon doesn't cause cancer. It isn't harmful to human health, and actually may be beneficial because it appears that it turns on the same switch that resveratrol does, turns on the same switch that the calorie restriction does. It's a stressor, a biological stressor. And, of course, the miraculous story is a wonderful little place in Iran called Ramsar, Iran. There's a little town, city there, and it has the highest radon count in the world. Researchers went running there. They wanted to tell the officials in Ramsar to evacuate the city once they found out there was that high of radiation, 25 times more background radiation than any place in the United States. The people are perfectly healthy. There's no outbreak of cancer there. The radon warning is just a fraud. The Environmental Protection Agency, God help me how they ever came to this. In 1999, there were some studies published, and then since then they've been warning us of radon. It's a phony hazard. If it does anything, it will help us live longer to get exposed to low doses of radiation. And in fact, that's exactly what the people who go to these little radium springs, you know, and jump in the water in these little spas and so on, tell us that they're healthier, and there probably was some sense to that all along. There's a little radium springs in a little place called Misasa, Japan, and the water there is really loaded with radium. People go jump in that water. The cancer rate in the villages around that spring are very low, whereas the surrounding ones outlying further out are much higher. There's no evidence whatsoever that radon is a health hazard. In fact, it may be a boom to health. Now, let's go back to the Bible. The early Bible days, the earth was fresh. The crust had just been formed. It released more radon and more radium, and it's possible that through the same trigger effect, like the resveratrol, like the calorie restriction, it was triggering the same gene inside the human body, and that could have been a reason why you hear about Methuselah living 970 years Adam living 900 years, Noah living 950. There were some mechanisms there. We're just now uncovering them. This is all right out of the Bible, all confirming everything that was in the Bible. So there were apparently different mechanisms that made all this possible, and we're just now getting down to where they are. It's all one gene in your body called the sirtuin 1 gene, and it makes an enzyme that repairs your DNA.
Well, you know, these are the most exciting things. I've always thought that this was because it stimulated the immune system, and that was why you had a lower cancer incidence in the areas with radon. But what you're saying certainly makes sense. And
well, through this process, the immune system is upregulated. It's just that that's further down the biological trail here. We get back down into the gene, then, of course, that's where it all starts.
All right, we'll be back in just a moment here with Bill Sardi. We welcome your calls out across America, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. You're on the cutting edge of the latest scientific information right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when, once again, I'm going to remind you about the meeting we're going to be having at the end of the month here in the Monterey Bay area at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course in Mid-County. And if you're not from this area, it really is one of the most beautiful spots around. And we do hope that many of you will come and bring your friends who'd like to get a good turnout. But we're going to be bringing in speakers. We're going to try to get you brought up to speed. It's exactly what's going on. And Bill Sardi will be there with a lot of great information. What he's just told you about how radiation actually protects against cancer. Now, too much radiation will kill you, but if you don't get so much that you're going to be killed by radiation poisoning, a low-dose radiation really is helpful. It's a process known as hormesis, and you need to understand that much of what the government is telling you is not true. In fact, a great deal of it is very hazardous to your health. You'll really enjoy Bill. I know that people who heard him last year enjoyed it, and this will be all new material. In fact, everything we'll be presenting at the conference is new. Joan Paris, going into the background of the USA Patriot Act and the implications of what's happening as we move from freedom towards fascism. And then Brad Dacus will be here giving us examples of the targeting of Christians all across the western part of the United States, indeed all across our nation, because they are Christians, because there are people who hate Christianity and will do anything to destroy it, and are using the structure of government. And Brad is on the front lines with the Pacific Justice Institute addressing that issue. And I think you'll be fascinated by Dr. Klink's program. He goes all over the world, or I should say all over the United States, giving this talk, and of course we'll have the videos there, but you'll really enjoy hearing what he has to say as we begin to bring together all of the various forces that are working within the Christian church to change both the message and the music of our churches. So then I'll be talking on Iraq, the untold story, the history of all the wars of the last century, why we are really in Iraq. We'll be talking about what's happening as far as the Supreme Court is concerned, the significance of the decision there today where Judge Roy Moore was thrown off the Supreme Court because he said that the very foundation of our freedom rests in God. The Ten Commandments was the very foundation of the Christian belief, and our nation was created as a Christian nation. Well, there's so much information we'll be putting out. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Hope to see you there. Well, Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Bill Sardi, and of course he's been telling us the cutting edge information that he's been able to come up with on these various genetic switches which allow the human body to go into more or less a static phase where there is the opportunity for cells to repair themselves and to cut down division. And of course, this will have down the line an effect on cancer. Do we have any idea how effective that will be?
Well, the anti-cancer mechanisms in resveratrol, this is a red wine component, the drug companies are trying to make a drug that will just target one aspect or mechanism of cancer. Resveratrol blocks every known mechanism that promotes cancer. Genetic mutation, it blocks the growth of the cell, it blocks metastasis or the spread of tumors, it blocks angiogenesis, the formation of new blood vessels that feed the tumors. It blocks every stage that we know. There are seven major stages or factors in the growth of tumors. It does all this with just 10 milligrams, apparently, though some higher doses are being used in some cancer experiments in animals. But regardless of this, the effect is profound upon cancer. There's literally no way cancer can get going whatsoever. It'll throw it into reverse. It can be used for leukemia, cancer of the blood, childhood leukemia. So it's a very, very potent weapon. One of the researchers for the National Cancer Institute traveled around the world, studied 30,000 different herbs and molecules that might have an anti-cancer effect. The number one molecule turned out to be resveratrol. He gave a report on it and said this is the most promising molecule in the world against cancer by far. There is nothing even close. So this is the molecule we're talking about. We're talking about a magic molecule in red wine. We get just a small amount there. We don't get it in grape juice. We don't get it in raisins. You get a tiny amount, of course, in some fresh grapes. Now, I will say there was a lady here in the United States in the 1930s, Johanna Brandt. She was a lady who had learned about fasting. Her family in South Africa were all meat eaters. They grew cattle. They all ended up with cancer in the family, and she came down with cancer and eventually used fasting to control her tumor, but it would kept coming back, and she'd go back into fasting. This went on for a number of years until she finally broke one of her fasts by eating grapes, and the cancer completely disappeared. She came to the United States with that story and tried to coach people into fasting and then eating grapes, fasting and then eating grapes. And her book, The Grape Cure, the post office refused to allow her to distribute it. Can you imagine? In the land of the free, they were not allowing a book to be sent through the post office. Eventually, the AMA came down five times since the 1930s saying the Grape Cure is a hoax and saying that there was no evidence it worked. Of course, they never conducted a study to find out if it did work. And, of course, that becomes the easy cop-out. And apparently there was some truth to Johanna Brandt. Her book was called The Grape Cure. You can still find it around in some old bookstores. So apparently there was something to this. Grapes have a magical molecule in them. Again, we don't get it out very well until alcohol extracts it, and then it becomes usable to us, and then it has to be preserved or stabilized and kept from oxygen, which is what is done in a wine bottle. So of course, we're going to have the option of a food supplement that does all this, that's stabilized and is active biologically and gives us another option to us, and it's not going to be expensive. But certainly this is interesting historically to understand a great deal of how fasting and grapes and so on have been used throughout history. If you'll understand, Moses was 80 years old. He fasted for 40 days. God presented and wrote for him on the clay tablets, the Ten Commandments. He was on a mountaintop for 40 days, possibly fresh earth, and it's kind of described like it was a volcano or some sort of volcanic rock there in the Bible. That would have been fresh, exposed rock that would have had more radium exposed from it, and so it's possibly through this hormesis effect we explained and through the fasting that he did that, again, Moses lived 120 years. He went on to live 40 more years from that point on, and, of course, the day he died, it said he was not infirm. He still had a strong body and good eyesight. So We may now understand some of the mechanisms by which people live long. They were meticulously recorded in the Bible, obviously for good reasons. Now we maybe are understanding some of those mechanisms. The Bible may certainly not be a bunch of fairy tales. It may all be true. From what we can piece together, the early Earth was different than what we have now. And, of course, possibly the plants had a lot more resveratrol in them. There's 70 species of plant on the Earth, the plants on the Earth that we know of that produce the resveratrol. The only one we extract from alcohol from on a regular basis is the grape, which we then use in wine. So that's why it's become a source of resveratrol. So the historical elements of this are as important as the scientific ones, because they do help us confirm that this is actually a true human longevity mechanism we can just learn how to activate.
I mean, I think it's sort of tragic when we find the AMA actually doing everything they can many times to suppress effective treatments and to attack. We know that there have been a number of instances where the AMA has done everything they could to suppress various treatments. In fact, there was a treatment many years ago based on herbs. It was Dr. Hoxie's treatment. The AMA tried to buy that. And they were going to market it on their own, except Dr. Hoxie insisted it would be given away free to people who couldn't afford it, and there was no way that Morris Fishbein was going to allow that. And so, of course, then they tried to use the power of the state to go after Hoxie and to, of course, imprison him because he was selling a cancer quack therapy, and the case went to court and Hoxie won. And there was this very, very famous case many years ago, but this is, I suppose, 70 years ago. The American people have never heard the story of what happened. But there were people, and this is, doesn't reflect the average doctor at all, but it does reflect on organized medicine, which has always been, I feel, very, very hazardous to the health of the American people.
Well, and understand, if they aren't trying to control the populations of the world, then what are they doing with this radon story here? Apparently, someone knows that radon gas, where there is more exposure to human populations, actually makes people healthier and live longer. And why would the EPA defy science, rig up all this stuff, and come up with this phony deal of scaring us all away from radon? Of course, where this all got exposed was we started to realize that the people in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, where they dropped atom bombs, surely where there was high-dose radiation, there was true cancer, but where the people got a low dose of the radiation, those people still living have lower cancer rates and are living longer. So this is where this all got exposed. They then went to some studies of shipyard workers who worked around radioactive materials and found out they were living longer and healthier. This goes on and on into a number of studies that were done. The EPA uses studies from miners who are deep down in the earth and are being exposed to high doses. That's an unfair calculation. The EPA says that 22,000 people every year in the United States die of lung cancer due to radon gas exposure. Where are the 22,000 dead bodies? I have never seen them. I've never met anybody or heard of anybody who died of lung cancer due to radon gas exposure. And that's because the numbers they come up with are what we call extrapolations. What they do is they calculate the number of people who would die of lung cancer if they were exposed to high doses of radiation and then extrapolate those numbers down as if small doses would produce the same effect just on a less incidence level. And, of course, this is how they come up with a 22,000 number. There are no body counts. There is nobody getting lung cancer of this. I never heard of it. If you weren't a smoker and you died of lung cancer, you'd think they'd send the radon monitoring truck out to your house. They don't, because it's not a problem. They want you to have your house tested for radon. They want you to seal the bottom of the house. It costs about $1,200. It's good for the economy. It's good for jobs. But, folks, it would also be a way to stunt the human lifespan. Maybe they don't want you to find out about it.
You know, I attend meetings of the Doctors for Defense Preparedness, And they have, not infrequently, Dr. Cohen comes, and he is a scientist who's really studied exactly what you're talking about. And when he started out, he really thought that there was going to be a relationship between radon and cancer. And as he did the studies, he found exactly the opposite was the case. And you were seeing literally no or very, very limited lung cancer in the areas where there was radon, much less than you would expect to find. And that was he figured this out on the basis of sex and employment and geography and everything imaginable. If you've ever heard Dr. Cohen's talk, it goes on for about an hour and slide after slide after slide as he goes through from every aspect trying to understand this phenomenon, which is totally contrary to what had been told. And the final conclusion was radon is not hazardous to your health, it's beneficial to your health. And the fact that the average individual has never heard of that, or of the process of hormesis, which means you can actually stimulate the body, and we've always thought it was the immune response, but perhaps this is the genetic process that Bill's talking about. But whatever the explanation may be, why we actually prolong life rather than shorten life with exposure to low-dose radiation. And yet the average American is never told that by any of the major media.
Well, the rather humorous part of this is I kind of looked it up and wanted to know, you know, if radon gas was all that bad, then our dogs and cats, they're living down there on the floor, they got smaller lungs, they'd be conked over, and, you know, dogs and cats can kind of get a whiff of radon or a gas easier than we can. They certainly know it's there. And, you know, we just don't see a level of any kind of lung cancer or anything in animals that are pets, you know, boarded up in a house. We just don't see it. In fact, there's no evidence of it whatsoever. So that would be the first place you'd find it, and we don't see it there at all. So it's also interesting when you step outside this country, the rest of the countries of the world are yawning and aren't worried about radon gas whatsoever. What is this program that's going on in the United States to program us to think that radon is so bad? And why would they push this on us? Why? Why? Is there some population control effort? I mean, I don't know. I think these are just questions we have to ask, but I became aware of all this by listening to Radio Liberty. Eventually, I began to scratch my head and said, there's something here, because I know you can expand the human lifespan a great deal more than what we've even been able to accomplish. Dr. David Sinclair at Harvard has now found the genetic switch that will make it possible to experiment and find those triggers. Triggers are stressors. That is, things that would put a stress on the genes in the human body. In this case, what we're finding is low-dose radiation, calorie restriction or starvation, or the reversal factor, which is resveratrol, kicks all these into place and causes this enzyme to be produced from a genetic switch in your body, and that little enzyme gives all this time for the genetic material, the DNA, to repair itself in the human cells. So this is the process. By the way, does it work? Does low-dose radiation work? There's a wonderful Japanese scientist, Dr. Sakamoto, who took 150 stage 4 end-of-life hopeless cases of cancer, gave them all low-dose radiation. 84% of them survived 4 years. 100% of the 84% have survived 9 years. He himself came down with colon cancer, treated it with low-dose radiation. He's perfectly healthy today. A gentleman who was 81 years old heard about this on the East Coast of the United States, begged the doctors at John Hopkins Hospital in Baltimore to treat him with this low-dose radiation. He had an incurable form of lymphoma. Eventually, through some political haggling around there, they eventually got past the radiologists who objected to this. He received the treatment. He's 81 years old. He's in perfect health, has a total remission of his lymphoma. We may have in our hands the most tremendous treatment ever available to humans with this low-dose radiation. We're hiding it from them. We're not utilizing it. We're scaring people of radiation. And maybe there's something afoot here. They're keeping this thing from us. What I'm trying to tell you is, if I can put it in the right words, there is a mechanism inside your body that's more powerful than any medicine, more powerful than any vaccine, more powerful than any vitamin ever discovered. And if you do all the things to lengthen your life and exercise and control your cholesterol and keep your weight, you'll maybe gain 5 to 8 years to your lifespan. But if you can learn how to turn this switch on, you're going to live 30 to 50 years longer in wonderful health. Now, that's what we're telling you. This is the genetic switch that's been uncovered. Of course, we're eager, we're excited about this. As we understand now, research can go on, and we have living laboratories where this has actually been done, as I'm trying to explain to you, where people calorie restrict, they live far longer. Where they drink red wine, they live far longer in good health. And so we now know that this is actually real, that it's taking place in our time. We just need the information to get to the public.
Well, let's go to Theodore calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Theodore.
Hi,
haven't heard
Dr.
from you in some while.
Well, I'm out here listening.
Oh, okay.
And, always glad to hear you, Mr. Sardi. And I had a couple of questions. I tuned in a little late, so I'm not sure exactly what you covered. But I'm curious on the low-dose radiation. How does low-dose radiation that you're talking about compare with the kind of radiation they use in cancer treatments and in mammography?
Right. Those are not whole body. You have to do the whole body. Number two is those are high-dose radiation. Now, I should say to everybody, there is a company in the world, comes here from Australia, and they have a little device that someone coming in an emergency room, you don't know what injuries and things they have, and you slide them into this little thing, and it kind of looks like a great big C arm, and the arm moves all the way up and down your body, kind of like a computer scanner would.
Mm-hmm.
And it, in 13 seconds, takes a whole body x-ray picture of your body with low dose radiation.
Uh-huh.
Very low dose. Oh my gosh, it's meant to take an x-ray to see your bones. It's a way of exposing the entire human body to low-dose x-rays in 13 seconds.
And would that qualify for what you're talking
about?
It would qualify.
It would do it. The mechanism, we could take the entire population of the world. There's a wonderful radiation biologist in Japan who said, please, somebody understand, this is a tremendous health thing, and we need to do more research and use it because the whole world is suffering, and we could just, in a matter of seconds, you know, you'd be healthier because you'd upregulate. Let me tell you how this works. Dr. Sakamoto in Japan took little mice. He pre-exposed them to low doses of radiation. And then later, hours later, he exposed them to high-dose radiation that would be lethal. 80% of those little mice lived through the event. When he didn't pre-expose them to low-dose radiation, in other words, the little survival switch hadn't been turned on, and he just nuked them real hard with this high-dose radiation, 3% of the animals.
Wow.
You understand?
Well, the next question I have is there's a business that I think was in the business of these kind of low-dose scans called AmeriScan. Were they doing these low-dose scans? Because they were.
You know, I'm not familiar with that company, but there is a different company here with a little machine that's very inexpensive and allows emergency room doctors and orthopedists to get a 13-second total body x-ray. So,
well, there was I think it was becoming a kind of a chain thing, and there was one over in, I believe, San Jose, and I don't know the details, mm-hmm. but I just was reading in the paper that they were forced out of business.
Mm-hmm.
And
I understand there was an era in the United States in our history that was radium water being sold, and there were radium springs people ran to, and of course, they didn't know what they were doing, so some people got exposed to some fairly high doses and got ill, but there was something to it. Some people were getting well. And of course, this is what they've been trying to tell us. There are still some radium springs around the world. There's some in Russia, some in Canada, a couple of them in the United States. I mean, there are still some of these places, and people swear they get healthier. So,
and if you do one of these low-dose radiation things, is it something you need to do regularly, or is it something that once you click it on?
I would think that Dr. Sakamoto has done the work in Japan, and basically it's something you repeat every once in a while.
Yeah. I mean, uh-huh. Once a year, every 2 years, or what?
We don't have a handle on it yet. As soon as I can get more information, of course, I'm hoping that as soon as I finish my book, I'll be able to travel and go to Japan, and interview him and others. This is what we do, is we get a chance to go firsthand and get some of these questions answered for us. So it's the only way to do it. And there's a lot of information out here, but it's sorting our way through it. It's a pinch me time of human history. As you hear all this, you're thinking I'm trying to sell you something or whatever. It's very difficult for me to tell a radio audience, ladies and gentlemen, we are about to enter a new era of human history. You will know how to live 30 to 50 years longer in good health and cure every disease. How do I tell anybody that and make it sound credible? That's why I've been taking the time on this longer program here tonight to fill in all the blanks for you.
Of course,
and let you know this is real.
The real question is, you know, do you want to live 50 to, 60 years longer given what the world is that we're creating right now?
Well, it's a good question, but I will tell you, you would live in good health. You wouldn't live in being infirm. So your cells would, in fact, you'd probably lose weight because your cells are going to go back to a different sense of metabolism. So, it's just understanding this mechanism, which is it's hidden in our bodies. God put it there. It's activated in times of stress as a kind of a way to preserve all living things. And by the way, everything living has a similar gene. This has been proven in yeast cells. That's a single cell organism. Been proven in earthworms, fruit flies, mice, and of course I'm giving you some of the human examples as we speak tonight.
Well, thank you. And I did have some questions about the
resveratrol.
Could you spell that?
Resveratrol. That little molecule is going to change all of our lives.
And is that available yet, or is it just
not available yet as a dietary supplement? You can go on the internet, and there's a number of companies selling it as a food supplement. Unfortunately, we got all those. We sent everyone we could find at Harvard, and they're all biologically inactive.
Uh-huh.
They have to be preserved in an airtight pill made under a nitrogen environment, kept from oxygen, processed in a certain way, even kept out of light, because light destroys all this. And, of course, it's a proprietary procedure. It's been developed up for the people at Harvard. They've tested it. It works. It's in pills. It's active. And we'll have them actually in our hands in a short period of time.
Okay, and until then, we should just enjoy our red wine.
Enjoy your red wine. As soon as this is available, Theodora, you'll hear it right here at Radio.
Well, now I know what those Catholics were up to at the when they were
there
doing
you
their
go.
Communion.
There you go.
Well, thank you very much.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, fine. Well, that was Theodora calling from Santa Cruz. Some very, very excellent questions. And with the radiation that is used by the oncologists, of course, they're really almost burning the cancer. They're just a high dose of radiation localized to one specific area, at least for most of the situations. But, you know, what Bill is talking about is low dose general radiation to stimulate the immune response in the individual. This is what it's all about.
Absolutely, and of course, as I say, there's historical evidence that this works, and people attending radium water springs and spas and so on, these are the kinds of things where they did get a low dose. They apparently were healthier, but for sure they weren't more sick. This didn't bring on any of that. People do it all the time. So we have evidence of this, that it's not harmful at the very least. And as I'm trying to give you the evidence of Dr. Sakamoto's work in Japan, some of the other studies that have been done here, of course, Science Magazine just 2 weeks ago came out with a report saying hormesis, this little low-dose radiation effect, is gaining credibility. And, of course, they're giving it a new look now that they're starting to understand some of these mechanisms in genetics. All of a sudden, it's kind of on the blackboard, and, of course, we're going to hear more about it. So how long you can keep this down, keep this information from the public, I don't know.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see. We've got a lot of exciting things happening. We're looking forward to having you with us here on the 29th of this month, and I hope a lot of people out there in the listening audience will be sure to be out there so they can hear your talk, get the latest information, and, of course, as soon as the resveratrol is available, why, we'll be talking about it right here on Radio Liberty. Bill, thanks so very much for being with us tonight.
Thank you. Everyone, support Radio Liberty.
God bless. Bye-bye. And this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. I hope you enjoyed the program. Certainly Bill is one of my favorite guests. And you notice I didn't have to do very much work tonight. He could have, in fact, I just sort of interject every once in a while, but he can carry the whole program. Tremendous knowledge. He's writing a book on this. And he actually went back to Harvard to interview Dr. David Sinclair, spent several hours with him, got the basic story, then was given all of the research, and building upon that, he's put together this book, and of course he will be on the front lines of making this product available to us in the very, very near future. So, with that as the background, I simply ask you to pray for America. I ask you to pray for our leaders, for our ministers, pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision, and for our protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, we'll be back once again. This is Dr. Stan saying good night, and may the Lord be with you.